Welcome back to Air Quality Matters. We already have the tools and knowledge we need to make a difference to the quality of the air we breathe in our built environment. The conversations we have and how we share what we know is the key to our success. I'm Simon Jones, and coming up, the second part of our special series of podcasts from India, where Air Quality Matters was the official podcast partner for the Healthy Buildings 2025 conference in Hyderabad. If you haven't heard part one, what are you doing here? Go on, off you go. We'll see you back here in a minute. If you have, let's get started. We are speaking with both the next generation of researchers here from the region and industry as well. It's a fascinating window into what's at the forefront of science and what the next generation of scientists are focusing on and the problems they are looking to solve. But also from industry, the businesses on the ground, innovating, solving problems and building the sector right now. Many of the challenges are the same. Many are different. What runs between them is a passion and drive to make a difference and share knowledge. The Healthy Buildings Conference, an ISIAC event, was a really special one, and I hope these conversations can bring to you a flavour of the dialogue that occurred there. I say at the beginning of these episodes, it's the conversations we have and how we share what we know is the key to our success. And this, I believe, extends globally. To truly understand how to solve the problems we have, we need to understand the full spectrum of challenges and opportunities that are in front of us. The perspectives on display here will feel familiar, but at the same time, offer a fresh view. Don't forget to check out the sponsors in the show notes and at airqualitymatters.net. First up, we have the researchers. In this conversation, in order of appearance, we have Sachin Dhawan, Sandeep Budd, and Aprizia Murran.
These podcasts are genuinely me really interested in what you're doing. I mean, I hope that came across when we were meeting online as well. I know some people weren't able to do that, but you know, these are fascinating subjects. And I think what's interesting and what we've heard in the podcast before was that while there are very big regional differences and very different routes into some of this science, this stuff's important to everybody everywhere. So the work that you're doing, I think, translates really well to all sorts of international audiences. So I think it's really good. And obviously the Healthy Buildings Conference is really good for bringing everybody together to talk about these things. For my listeners and people listening online that haven't met you, probably a good place to start, because there's three of you, is perhaps if we introduce ourselves, who you are and where you're from and the kind of stuff that you're working on. Perhaps if we start with you.
My name is Sachin Dhawan. So I'm doing PhD from IIT Delhi. So my core research area is, so we are working on multiple things at a time. So in my PhD, I'm working on developing a bioaerosol sampler that is specifically for pollens. So we have developed one pollen sampler and we've used a new technique for identifying pollens, that is total internal reflection microscopy. So traditionally, we use, let's say, staining techniques with bright field microscopy, but it has a lot of noise. So we are using TIR microscopy, which gives us emergent wave scattering signatures of biological particles, specifically pollen and fungal spores, and which reduces, it's sort of dark field microscopy, but with scattering signatures, which reduces the noise to a certain extent. And then we'll be using computer vision models for automating the entire process of, let's say, identifying the pollen particles, counting the pollen particles, and classifying the pollen particles, because in ambient air there is no single species of pollen. There are hundreds of species and their size varies from 2.5 to 100, although the major range is 10 to 30. But in between 10 to 30, there are multiple different particles. So it is very important to identify, because not each and every pollen is, let's say, harmful or the allergenic. So we have to identify also which is allergenic and we have to keep a check on this.
Yeah. And even the ones that are allergenic aren't allergenic to some people. And then they are for, you know, my daughter is allergic at a very particular time of year for grass. I will get a bit of a sniffle at the beginning of the year with tree pollen, but she isn't affected by that at all. So it's really funny. It's really interesting that even those allergenic pollens, some of them are going to impact you at different times of year. So, you know, I react in summer to grass pollen, or my daughter does, sorry. I would get a little bit sniffly in with tree pollen. So you're really looking at speciating this kind of thing.
Yeah, that's that, because it is very important. So this is one part of it. Allergenic pollen causes allergy to people. But there are certain times when the concentration of pollens which are not allergenic is very high. They will also act as allergens. So we also need to, that's why we are classifying and enumerating both. It is important because if we are, let's say, tilia, it's a very common species. But if the concentrations goes beyond a permissible limit, although there is no permissible limit, but if the concentration goes beyond, let's say, acceptable limit, it will be very, very high. And it may cause discomfort. It may not cause allergenic reaction, but it will cause some discomfort to people.
Yeah, let's come back to that, because that's a really interesting concept, this idea of limits and thresholds for pollen, I think is really interesting. Perhaps introduce yourself.
I'm Dr. Sandeep Bude. I completed my PhD jointly from University of Alberta, Canada, and IIT Roorkee. And the topic on which I researched on since 2015, you can call it, yeah. I tried to create a risk assessment methodology, a framework for settlements which are next to the industries. So basically, an industrial cluster has several industries. I mean, group of industries are called a cluster. So I did my study for the case of Hyderabad, which is known as a pharma hub of Telangana or a pharma hub of India, like where around 40% of the Indian pharmaceutical exports are done from this locality alone. So what exactly is happening is during late nights, these industries, they release pollutant into the atmosphere, say from around 2 a.m. in the morning to 4 a.m., which cannot be seen, which cannot be traced. So, I mean, no satellite or any other data source can trace the pollutant emission from these industries, which are directly landing in the neighborhoods next to it. So industries were asked to release pollutant maybe during the late evenings, because that is when the lapse rate supports it for the pollutant release. And industries, like, they overproduce the pharmaceutical production and then they release it during late nights. And during my master's in 2016, like, I was calculating the livability scores for these settlements next to the industries, and I stayed there for 5 days, and for first 3 days I got heavy fever, and then after a day I lost my smell and taste. And then when I'm asking people, like, do they smell anything, they say no, because that is when I came to know that yes, something is affecting, which is neurotoxic. You eat a paracetamol a day in small quantity, after a few days that won't act on your body. So then I thought, yes, like, this is where I need to research on. And I started on it, and I did a course in geomatics to solve the same. But like I said, no satellite data, yeah. Records during the late night hours. And then I tried to look it from the case perspective. So I did a degree in law on urban and environmental law from National Law University, Delhi. So where I submitted a thesis on around 79 cases where there is a conflict between the industry and the individual. So then I proceeded into my PhD, and yeah, here I am.
So it sounds like you're really at kind of the interface between the impacts on ambient air quality of industrial releases and policing, really. It's like, how do you start to track and understand plumes that are coming from those areas into other spaces? That sounds fascinating. Yeah, we must come back to that. And yourself?
Yeah, my name is Aprisia. I'm from Indonesia, and my background is from architecture. I did my bachelor in architecture in Indonesia. Then I continue my master's degree in Netherlands in Tildorf, still in the same architecture, but more specialized into engineering. And my research domain has always been centered around EAQ, but more specifically into bus occupancy evaluations, because I'm interested to see how the buildings works after the occupancy by the residents, because it creates more different, or maybe there's a, you know, slightly different than before the design intention like that. And now, after I finish my master's, I come back to my country. I work with a local NGO. It's called ARCOM. It's a community architects, and we help the urban vulnerable groups, like they are from the low-income families. We investigated about the thermal comfort and also in relation to the climate change, like with the overheated buildings now. And we want to know what can retrofit strategies or maybe adaptation to the thermal comfort that can be done, especially for these vulnerable groups. Yeah,
really interesting. And I think it's fascinating. It was the same with the last group, actually, a mix of engineering and architecture perspectives on the built environment is so interesting and different but similar. You know, I think it's a fascinating global view to have. And I think one of the interesting things about architecture is this, the vision for spaces and spaces working for people. And I know engineering does the same thing, but it's from a slightly different perspective in architecture, I sense. And it's been said to me many times on the podcast that, you know, the built environment is one of these few spaces we have very few feedback loops on post-occupancy. So many other parts of industry will have a lot of feedback. You know, the automobile industry, pharmaceutical industry, there's a lot of follow-up trying to understand impacts of what happens. But buildings, very often, we just kind of build them and then run away as fast as we can and move on to the next one, don't we? So I think it's brilliant. I wanted to come back to yourself because I think the pollen one, on the last podcast we were doing with your colleagues, someone was looking at plastics in the air, which again is a new area, I think, trying to understand the impacts, again, a particulate really that is having an impact on our body. Do you think when you're looking at things like pollen and mold spores and things like this, that this is another area, another frontier of research that is a complex challenge as well? Like you said, there are thousands of mold species, obviously. There are thousands of species of pollen. And the challenge is trying to speciate them, understand when they're a problem and when they're not. Is that your sense of it, that this is, I mean, we know about pollen for a long time and we know about mold for a long time, but I personally still get the sense that this is quite a frontier area of research.
It is.
Yeah.
So let's take an example. The pollen allergies in developed countries varies from 15 to 30%. In Europe, it is approximately 50% or more. But if you talk about India, we can't say because we don't have any data. Right. So without data, we can't say that the allergies. In India, there is a term called seasonal asthma. So seasonal asthma is there. But why it is there? No one knows. It occurs in the months of March and October, which coincides with the peak pollen season. So it happens, but we can't correlate because we don't have any data. That's where we have started this work, so that we have our own sampler. And in India, we don't have any sampler. There is one Burkhardt sampler. There are a few monitoring initiatives, maybe in Delhi, in Chandigarh, in Kolkata. So there are few initiatives, but the samplers are like, you know, they are manufactured in 60s and they're only available here. So recently, some companies tried to, you know, they manufactured some samplers in Europe and they, you know, trained these samplers very well. Like, you know, they're capable of identifying different types of pollens. But the problem is the data is from Europe. And the Indian tropical conditions and European conditions are different. If the species are different, they are of no use to us, right? So we are trying to generate our own data so that we can generate our own data, we can train our own data, we could have more robust results, better and dependable results, which could be used for these kinds of, let's say, epidemiological studies or maybe correlation studies, just to have an understanding of how these allergies are happening. Plus, this technique that we are integrating, it is capable of identifying fungal spores also. So the scattering signatures are different. But currently we are looking onto the pollen, but both things are existing.
Yeah, maybe one releases innovation in another as well. And yet another example, isn't it, that we talk about stuff that floats in the air, the physical particulates rather than the gases, as if it's one thing, and a lot of particulate measurements, we're talking about the one thing. And I always get in trouble because I keep saying it's analogous to TVOCs, talking about particulate matter without talking about what it's made of is a bit like talking about total volatile organic compounds. It's virtually a useless number. And I think that's really interesting. But I think what's interesting about pollen and mold spores is that, unlike some pollutants, where I think we accept there's no safe level of, heavy metals or something that's got a toxicological impact on the body, I don't think anybody thinks that a completely sterile environment is good for anybody. We've lived in our environment amongst pollen and mold spores for thousands and thousands of years, yet for some reason in the last 20 or 30 years, all of a sudden, as we were seeing the incidence of reactions and broad spectrum toxicological reactions to these things that have been around us our entire lives. So it's a fascinating area for me, because it's an area where we can't even say what a healthy level is. We don't know where the baseline is. I think everybody accepts that you can't get rid of mold spores or pollen from the air, generally speaking. So what is a good level in the microbiome? What does good look like, and how do we know we're not good?
For PM10, we do have standards, guidelines and everything.
Yeah.
For pollens, we don't, because it's a natural phenomena and it is vital for our environment also. See, pollens are responsible for reproduction in plants.
Yeah.
So their presence means a lot. But the problem arises due to rapid urbanization. And with rapid urbanization, we started, integrating green infrastructure. So the green infrastructure is using different varieties of maybe trees, herbs, shrubs, grasses. But they are not looking at it in the perspective of which species may be allergic. So we are trying to solve one problem of urbanization, climate change, pollutants, and so many things.
Yeah.
But we are creating another problem, which is causing allergic reactions to people.
Yeah, I saw a report recently from New York about they've been planting the wrong species of trees that have actually been releasing terrible amounts of pollen into the local area, and people are reacting. Now, it's cooled the street, the urban cooling, it's been very good, but the unintended consequence has been.
Actually, I remember reading a study from North America where they tried to, the North American cities, they constitute around 35-40% of the green area. So green area, it has mature trees, it has plants, it has saplings, grassland. So where they tried to relate the asthma cases with the amount of age of the trees, like the number of mature trees and then the other trees. And then they did a relative good comparison. And then they tried to tell, okay, this species is the one which is causing this. So in order to counteract it, what kind of species need to be planted in the next plan of 2030 or 2040. So these are the kind of plant cities are coming with in the West. I think even India needs something of this sort, where things need to be looked at a city lens, at a city scale. So
yeah, really interesting. And it's fascinating, there's so much potential just from a technological perspective, being able to speciate, measure and monitor so that we can have a picture that we can react to, as opposed to reacting at a public health level, going, hang on a minute, why is everybody asthmatic? seasonally is a bit after the fact. Is it's not preventative medicine at that point?
See, there's one more thing. Pollen, only there are very few people understanding what these pollen grains are causing. See, most people are still focused, especially in India, on PM 2.5 and PM 10, because this is the major problem, especially in cities like Delhi, Bangalore, or maybe Mumbai also. So focus is still on PM 2.5 and PM 10. But as soon as we move forward, we try to solve the problem of PM 2.5. This problem of pollen is getting bigger.
Yeah.
So it is still underlooked, because there are very few researchers who have been working on this problem, especially in India. We don't have any data. So we need to work in tandem. PM 2.5 is there. We have, it's our first and foremost priority. But this is also important. And let's say PM10. PM10 doesn't mean it is only, you know, soot particles or maybe mineral dust. It has pollen and fungal spores also.
I think that's a great window into the fact that, you know, this stuff's not as simple as it looks.
Yes,
you know,
it's not as simple.
Putting simple numbers on things doesn't speak to half the picture. I thought it was fascinating what you were saying about the pharmaceutical industry and how you found yourself looking at it. But I think that might be a surprise to a lot of people, that industries off-gas or release pollutants as part of manufacturing process. You would assume that that's kind of dealt with and scrubbed and managed very clinically, because our perspective of pharmaceutical manufacturing is it's a very precise, overly engineered environment, and certainly the spaces that people work in can be very well engineered spaces. Yet from what you're saying, industry can have a practice of effectively releasing waste gases and waste materials.
So if you see in the lens of industries, we have something called OSHA rules, like the hazard rules. So where they clearly specify what should be the limit of the indoors within an industry when the pharma product is made. But what happens is we do not have a regulation when it moves out, when it moves out of the premises. So in fact, the Indian laws were taken from British laws, like basically UK laws, where we value land than the health of the individual. So if you take North American laws, there the human rights comes first, then comes the land right. So it goes this way. So in India, what exactly is happening is industrial release is done into the open atmosphere, and it gets deposited in the settlements like next to like hardly 500 or 1,000 meters from it. There is no data to prove it. We do not have enough sensors in India. We have hardly 380 outdoor sensors, out of which like maybe 170 sensors, they record the data continuously. So there is so much data gap. And because of this, though you try to file a complaint or file a case, we do not have enough proof to, you know, like produce.
But you know it's there. You know it's happening. I'm guessing the kind of things that they're releasing are very specific. So broad spectrum ambient air quality monitors are not picking this stuff up. This is, you have to have very specific measurements to capture perhaps some of the things that are being released, do you?
One of the important problems which I have found in my cases, the rooms are small, but number of occupants who are living within that household or within that built-up area are high. Like say around 9 people are sleeping within a small room, and then the pollutant enters in, though you want to close down the window. So these are heavier gases basically, which are near to the ground, and they infiltrate into the living space. And wherever there are low pressure zones within a house, these pollutants tend to get into those low pressure zones. So in majority of the building plans, low pressure zones are bedrooms. So this is where people sleep, and then they inhale till the morning. That means their average dosage is high. And so that is how it is affecting them the most. And the elderly and the children, like they, in majority cases, like when I have done the primary survey, they're sleeping on the floor. So the one who sleeps on the floor inhales the most.
And you were saying to me yesterday that you do quite a lot of, you're a data guy as well. So is a lot of the work that you've done kind of modeling work as well, trying to model how these plumes might move and what happens at a city level or a district level about the movement of this stuff?
Yeah, so basically what I tried to do is I tried to create a relation between the low ventilation zones and then the inequality map at a city scale. So like back then in North America, you call it percentage black population with respect to the PM2.5 hotspots. Whereas for the city of Hyderabad, so I related it with the percentage low ventilation with respect to the percentage scheduled calves and scheduled drive population. So, and it has clearly shown a relation with respect to the percentage scheduled caste population, because in Hyderabad, the scheduled caste population is much higher compared to the scheduled tribes. So that means the relation is clearly sitting, and there needed a good solutions at the building law scale with the cities. I mean, cities need to have a solution for this problem. For example, like they need to have a recommendation for a particular build typology where encouraging a particular window size or encouraging a particular room dimension. Or so these kind of inputs need to be there.
Or local, much stricter local laws on how and when waste can be, you know, sent to atmosphere, I'd imagine as well. I imagine there's an industrial kind of part to this as well. Sounds really interesting. You mentioned when you were introducing yourself earlier that you're working with a local NGO. So you're working with people that are fuel poor. You're working with people in... Are you working in slum districts as well? So you're working all the way down to the lowest level of the built environment. That's really... That must be a fascinating area to apply your knowledge to. I had a wonderful conversation with Priyanka Koltreta from Delhi, and she'd done a lot of work in slums. And it seems to me there's a lot of very good work that can be done. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit, changes in habit and culture and agency, and simple things can have really big impacts on people, can't they? What's the kind of a good practical example of the things you've been able to look at in these environments? And have you been able to do things that you can see can make a difference to people?
When I look at to these people, I mean, like, even though they are coming from the low, like a poor family, but I think there is a potential that can be leveraged off from them. It's their creativity, I mean, to make their own housing. For example, we did now a research on how they can adapt to the overheating and how can they adapt in the personal level to face the heat in their housing. But then the challenge is now it's how to, you know, align the research and then align their understanding, for example, the thermal comfort, and then to get them know about the heat source and then what is the problems that they are facing now. But I see that with their creativity on making something, I mean the building materials, or maybe they decorate the ventilations, I think it's the good start for them to retrofit the buildings, because you know, when we work with this kind of financial conditions, we cannot do much with them, because the problems is they are informal residents. I mean, they don't have like a legal ownership of the housing, so the government and other stakeholders are difficult to enter to fund them. So the potential is only themselves. So we try to leverage their creativity, but also the collective actions to just gather their potential and then making advocacy to the government to help them.
Yeah.
I think their creativity and the collective actions that really helps to facing this kind of challenges.
do you know what I find fascinating about that is how powerful that is everywhere. You know, it doesn't matter what part of the world you talk to people, there's this disconnect between the built environment and people's agency to have an impact on their own outcomes. So whether you're talking about where I live, where we have very cold, damp winters, and lots of people live in very terrible conditions, moldy, damp, cold conditions that kill people. And a lot of the work and a lot of the challenge is trying to find ways to creatively engage with people to help them understand what they can do. Not in a way that's preachy or not in a way that's trying to teach them building physics, but in a way that gets them to care enough. Because that's the other thing, and I imagine this is so true for you. People have battles to fight every day, and ventilation probably isn't at the top of the list, right? It's feeding kids and getting enough money for fuel, and there are many things that people are trying to do day to day. So how you stitch in how you control your built environment into that space is a real challenge. And that I think is an area where there can be huge international cooperation, is learning what resonates at different levels with people to act in a certain way, behave in a certain way, interact with their built environment in a certain way to manage the situation, you know, overheating, thermal cut, how do they creatively manage solar shading, that kind of thing, you know. This is not a problem that's just for the global south. You know, we've got buildings that have been very poorly designed and built in the global north that are now overheating and killing people, but there's never been the culture of managing overheating. So there's this whole new dialogue and language and interaction that's got to be created to teach people to how to manage heat in their home, you know. Really, really fascinating. One of the things I wanted to ask you all is the kind of the how did you get here question. I think we've got a good understanding of kind of the last few years of the kind of research you've been doing. But how did you kind of find yourself in engineering and environmental science and architecture looking at these kind of things? Was it siblings doing the same? Was it just an area you found yourself good at school? Was there something that you found interesting in the space that could kind of led you along a path? How did it work for you?
My family is a traditional business class family. So my brothers, they're both a business person. So I'm the only one who have moved into the field of engineering, then into the master's, then I went into the PhD. So my bachelor's is in biotechnology and my master's is environmental engineering. So the problem I'm working on, it is an integration of both. Because these pollen particles, you need some understanding of what are the plant cells that do's and don'ts, and understanding of the intricate features of plant cell, how to understand what you're looking at it.
Yeah.
Right. Environmental engineering alone is not sufficient. So my two educations are combined into my current PhD problem. Plus, after completing my master, the first job I went to, it was in a medical institute where they tried to understand the impact of pollen on people suffering from asthma and COPD. Plus, they have in all the, you know, how air pollution also come into the impact. So it was very, you know, interesting kind of work that I did. It was earlier that we were just working on, you know, measuring the particulate matter, CO, that's it, and seeing what is the indoor air quality, what is the outdoor air quality. But looking in a different perspective, how these levels are impacting certain patients. So in that particular project, we had patients from a particular area. So we measured the pollens. So we see how, you know, the people who have been living in these areas are impacted by pollens.
Yeah. And as a researcher, you've just got this fundamental desire to problem solve. You're going, I've got these two discipline skills. I'm trying to measure pollen. This isn't as easy as it should be. We need a thing for that.
Yeah.
Or a process for that. I know what I'm going to research is that. Yeah.
So the story didn't start here with PhD. So after I worked on multiple projects of source apportionment, you know, we developed one PM 2.5 sensor also in between. So during the part of development of PM 2.5 sensor, which is not a traditional light scattering base, so we worked on a bright field imaging based sensors. So our motive was so that we can actually see what is in the air. You know, PM 2.5 is 100 microgram per meter cube. Everyone understands, okay, it's the concentration. But what it actually means, so we started with that. We captured the particles onto a sampling media. We imaged them. We got the concentration plus the shape of the particles, plus size distribution. The shape actually plays a very big role because the geographical origin particles, they are of irregular shape. The combustion particles, they are generally circular or cylindrical. The secondary aerosol particles, they are like square particles. So my interest, you know, went one stage higher. So I had understanding of Pollens. Now I have understanding of microscopy. I had basic understanding of my engineering discipline. So we went on to, you know, me, my supervisor said, ki, we need to make one Pollen sampler because this is an emerging problem. People have been working on PM 2.5, how PM 2.5 is aging, how it is forming, what other sources have. There is so many studies, but the Pollen, it's not there. The data, it's not there. So ki, we should work on developing our own sampler. We need, because nowadays, Make in India is the biggest initiative. So if we can develop a sensor or sampler in India, right, as per our own requirements, because our conditions are not as the other country's conditions. So we have to make sampler as per our requirement. So we did that. We had the numerical modeling done. Then we did the CFD. Then we fabricated the sampler. And then we did all the monitoring. We imaged thousands of images just to see what are different signatures. And then we came on to this particular path that we are now, we have developed the sensor. We have new technique because the technique I'm talking about is TIR, total internal reflection microscopy. The technique in itself is not new, but the application, this is the first time someone has tried to, you know, use TIR microscopy for pollen imaging. People have been using fluorescence microscopy, just traditional microscopy, phase imaging. But now we thought, ki, let's try to have even better quantification, you know, reduce the noise as much as you can. And dark field microscopy, it's itself is a noise reducer. Plus, with our evanescent wave scattering signatures, we have moved it up a notch. So now we are able to, you know, correlate that, yes, this particular is particular particle is a pollen, that this is a fungal spore. And with limited knowledge, so I'm not an expert in botany. So understanding about what is a pollen particle, then integrating it. Because in traditional microscopy, you have to be a good expert. Otherwise, you will misinterpret or mislabel. So this technique actually helps people like me or someone who is actually interested in working this field. And the main thing is it will be good for India because we can generate our own data, our own techniques, our own devices. You know, India has a huge market.
Brilliant. Really interesting. What about yourself? How did you kind of find yourself sliding into the work you do?
I come from my dad works in coal mines. So the northern part of Telangana, the state in which we are in, and the Jharkhand, all this belt, like it is a coal belt. So where majority of the people, they work in coal mines, the underground mines, people go like 3 to 4 kilometers down and then they work. And every day, like right from the, so like say when I know that when people get exposed to smoke or the while working, so they get exposed to this coal. So, and my dad used to cough during late nights. So the whole night he used to cough, and once he's out from his work location, whenever he used to work his leg, wash his legs or hands, I used to see a black suit, you know, washing by. So then I thought, okay, so something on the body is this much. So how much did he inhale, or like what about his pores? And earlier, like in Singareni, Singareni is the company like which does the production and all. So they used to give jaggery. The jaggery, it's a jaggery from the sugarcane juice. So why they used to give that is, when you eat jaggery, so it basically, when it has the, it adds all that soot which was in your pores, and then it cleans your throat or the internal organ. So that is what it believed to be. And then fast forward, then I have done my bachelor's in civil engineering from Hyderabad, and then once I got into master's, then I went to the pharmaceutical area. And when I know that, okay, people are telling that they don't smell anything when I ask, but when I measure, the value clearly shows a hike. So that interested me, and then I started doing multiple degrees into it. And then in my PhD, so Professor Sandeep Agarwal from University of Alberta, so basically he's a human rights researcher. So when I said that people living in low-lying areas next to the industrial area, so this is what affecting them the most. So he immediately picked it up, and he said, let's do it. And we are able to prove that issue. We published that work, and that work, in fact, it was published in Times of India in the in the main page. And that means my work was circulated to around, say, at least 60 to 80% population of India. So I'm happy to...
Has impact,
Yeah. So, I mean, the impact was proven, and currently, I'm trying to build a ML algorithm where the moment you enter the dimension of the site area or your site area, it will be in a position to tell you how much should be the volume of the building in order to reduce the risk from these industrial pollutants. Like, what should be the volume of the building? What should be the sizable opening of the windows and doors? So that algorithm is going to tell you the standard pattern to reduce the impact. So I'm trying to work at the ML and building bylaw application. So
I mean, it might be a tough or impossible question to ask, but it seems to me that that's trying to find engineering problems to a source control problem. Do you see what I mean? That is the answer for those kind of things not in the source, rather than how big a hole should be in someone's home to stop something coming in that probably shouldn't be there anyway? That's where it becomes an environmental justice problem, which sounds like it's something that's driven you through your career actually so far, as all the way from childhood seeing your father be impacted by work through to seeing people being impacted by industry. That seems like a really interesting driver for your work, a work that has impact as well, I'd imagine.
And one of the interesting findings through my research is when I tried to do I have created a digital twin for a 1 square kilometer neighborhood. And when I did the analysis, it clearly showed that the house plants, though they may look big, the one room setups, they are less exposed to the pollutant concentration because there is single wash away. It has less low pressure zones within a house. Whereas when you have a big house, divide it into small walls like toilets, and then small rooms, like too many small rooms. So this is creating too many low pressure zones within a house. So these are the ones who are getting affected the most.
Interesting.
So it is like the one who is rich is like, normally this is how we think, like the one who is poor is getting exposed the most. But no, it's vice versa. It's opposite. The one who lives in a bigger house with more partitions, he's getting affected the most.
Yeah, the law of unintended consequences. We've seen this all the time. And I remember talking to Priyanka about this in Delhi. People that, because the economy improved, people that lived in buildings that were basically cooled naturally, they lived in an outdoor environment effectively, they would have habits and culture of sage burning and sweeping floors, dirt floors, and cooking on solid fuel stoves and so on. But as people lift out of certain economic statuses, they can afford things like air conditioning units, you start to seal spaces off. So you go from a very spiky exposure to pollutants to a much more sustained level of pollution because you've sealed yourself in a box. because you're trying to keep the air conditioning on. So there are unintended consequences to everything, aren't they? People that think they're safe have unintentionally built a home that have got negative pressure zones in that are now pulling pollutants in from outside.
And one of the interesting thing is when I inquired them, what do you think the main problem is? So wherever there is a woman or girl who is at the age of marriage, so basically they are not preferred much from these neighborhoods. The reason is either they are having the early period, like PDS dates, because indirectly these pollutants, it is affecting them. It is affecting their, even their next birth. Okay, there was this thing if a woman from these neighborhoods is married, so she may not be bear children. So even this kind of thing was in the market, and they clearly said
it's already having an impact on society. Yeah, fascinating. What about yourself? How did you end up doing the work that you did? What kind of brought you into architecture and to where you are?
Well, actually, I come from architecture background family. Both of my parents are studying architecture as well, but none of them are studying about the AEQ or air quality kind of things. But the one thing that brought me to study about air quality is because I have a personal asthma. I have asthma, and I was curious about the, because my asthma is always worsening, especially in my bedroom when I turn on the AC. It's getting cold and it gets worsening. But then I try to shift it to just open my windows during the night. So I just turn off the AC, but then it still get worsening. And I think I realized, okay, there's something wrong with the outdoor air quality because it doesn't, get less. Then I start to curious about, okay, what is the, what is the impact or what is the effect of the, of using AC, the mechanical ventilation, or just naturally. So I just want to investigate these two kind of ventilations. So that's why in my bachelor, I investigate the effect of this kind of ventilations. But then when I moved to the Netherlands, surprisingly, in the 2 years of studying, my asthma doesn't, get surface. It's healthy. I didn't have to take my medications. Because if I compare to back in my home country, like almost every month, I have to take my medication or just getting once hospitalized to my asthma. So yeah, that's why the critical issue that I want to study more about the air quality. And also I realized that because I have an asthma, it makes me more sensitive to the spaces, to the dust and something. So when I enter building or specific rooms, I can, okay, this room is damp or drought, and or maybe there will have a lot of dust. So I think it's giving me another perspective of seeing rooms and the quality of the rooms. And if we're linking back to your topics about the safe baseline, I think it's also difficult to define because, for example, with me, with the sensitive groups, with asthma, I think it's very difficult to define, okay, which zone or which room is safer for me, because it will be different to another person's, right? It's personalized and individualized.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's, I think it's always interesting research driven by personal experience as well. And even though you come from a technical family of architects, you even still had to go on a personal journey of going, well, is it better on or off? Or what's the right, is it windows open, windows such? So you realise that this isn't a unique journey, that it doesn't matter whether you're working with people in lower economic groups or in people in normal houses. Nobody really has this understanding of the built environment, and we don't really know what to do. We just kind of assume, I think, buildings work. And so whatever was happening, we just assume is the right thing. We often don't think about our personal agency and outcomes. I think that's fascinating. Just to finish off, because I knew we were going to run out of time. We always do in these conversations. What's the one thing we're not talking about that we should be, from your perspective? So whether that's at conferences like this, whether that's out in the field where you're working or whether that's in the community and the people and families that you live with. From your perspective, what's the subject we're not paying enough attention to that we should be focusing on more?
I think there are multiple subjects. So
I'm going to have to get you to pick one, though.
Okay.
Because we'll be here till 7:30, because I'm fascinated as well. So
okay. So the first thing, I have been talking about Poland for quite long time.
Yeah.
But the associated thing is no development of any kind of samplers or sensors are taking place. So no one is interested in, manufacturing or developing. We have been getting it from different countries, using it in India. But I think we should focus more on developing in India so that we have our indigenous sensors and samplers which are capable of working in Indian conditions, because our conditions are different. There are high changes in temperature, relative humidity. There are different seasons. The concentrations are considerably high.
And a huge market. Yeah.
It's a very huge market.
Yeah.
So we need to look onto this specific thing, make in India more bigger version.
Something
specifically
to be done
for, let's say, air quality as a whole, which includes Poland, PM2.5 and everything.
Very interesting. Yeah. What about yourself? What's the one thing we're not talking about that we should be?
What I feel is there is a need to distribute the knowledge in the other disciplines. For example, an electronics guy, he is working only of the algorithmic details of the data collected. So he's more into tuning the algorithm of that specific device. He should also have the knowledge of the problems of the chemicals. So while cooking, the value hides when you cook so-and-so dish. So I think there is a need for interdisciplinary action for professionals in different fields. So that is where the real research comes.
Yeah. And perhaps a really good example of why events like this are so important, bringing disciplines together. But I think we could all sit here today and pick several disciplines that aren't here that should be, and I think that's a really important point, that there's so many people can have an impact on this space that aren't in the conversation. Electrical engineers that are inventing the next devices that can measure pollen aren't in these conversations and should be. Yeah, really fascinating. What about yourself? What's the one thing you think we're not talking about that we should be?
Since I'm working in relation to the climate change, I think it still need to address that how the AQ or air quality in relate to the future climate scenarios. I mean, with doing the projections, calculation projections, like what will happen in the 5 or 10 years upwards, and then what strategies or adaptation that we can implement, for example. And also, I also highlighting that as we are now, the rising temperatures, the overheated buildings, and how it might affect to the indoor air quality. Because if the rising temperatures, it means that it will be more increasing the pollutants as well, right? So I think it should be addressed now for the projection for the future.
Really interesting. Yeah, that's three brilliantly different answers. I think that's great. And it just goes to show that the sector's got a great future, because there's just so much to do that we're not doing yet. All three of you, thank you so much for taking time out of your very precious time here, because I know you're busy, and Sandeep, you've been doing a lot of organising as well. So, I think it's been great for you to be able to come on and share with the listeners and the podcast community that I have some of the work that's going on in this region and some of the up and coming research and new viewpoints on the sector, rather than what we hear from the old guard all the time. It's really interesting to hear the reflections of people that are doing the research, coming up through the system, and where they see this all going. So thank you so much for spending an hour or two with me this afternoon. It's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Coming up next, a conversation with the industry, and a really great mix at that. Again, in order of appearance and as before, this is a conversation with Karthik Alamali from Testo India, Kapil Kapoor, Chief Technical Officer with Veyugard Climate Tech, and Rahul Kapoor, Managing Director of Camphil India.
I really appreciate you taking time away from the conference, because I know that these conferences are really important. It, you know, it's not only a regional crowd here, which is really important, but also an international crowd. And, you know, we're hearing some really interesting perspectives through the conference on a very broad spectrum of topics. So I know your time is valuable. So thank you all very much for coming up here and talking to me for a while. Because this is on audio and people aren't necessarily going to know who's who, although I'll introduce you at the beginning of the podcast properly, as I always do, perhaps if we just start with a round robin and explain who you are and who you work for. So perhaps we start with yourself.
I am Karthikeyan. I work for Testo. Again, Testo is a German-based company. We have in India presence from 2005, and I take care of southern part of India for HVAC sector. And most of the products are from portable, where you can take the instrument, you can perform analysis, store the data and read the data. So most of the instrument is like that. And the main motto of our Testo is every building, we have a solution. Any building if you take, we have a solution. We can sort out any kind of things. That is Testo. Yeah. And the quality all over the globally, whoever do research, analysis, most of them, they prefer Testo because of the reliability, quality as well.
What are the kind of things that you're selling here from the Testo range? What are the kind of...
Portable temperature, relative humidity, lux, sound, RPM, CO2, CO, and again, thermal camera, flue gas analyzers, data loggers, and temperature strips, starts from hygrometers.
Yeah,
so everything altogether. Yeah, yes, a lot of things are there. And again, well, a T range, if you go, a lot of types, hardware anemometer, a vane type, and again, pita tube, and even air capture hood, a lot of things, everything.
And I think for the listeners that from a global audience, Testo is one of the recognized names in monitoring and measuring.
Generally, if you say globally, we are number one in HVAC. HVAC, and again in pharmaceutical industries, and as well as food, we have a lot of food related products also, where you can measure the quality of the oil, that is called TPM, total polar material. That also we have a solution. And again, especially for food industry, food thermometers we do. And it's not about industry, that's why I say repeat the thing. Testo, every building we have a solution. Any building, if you go pharma, we have a solution. If you go to power, we have a solution. If you go to green building, we have a solution. We have a product. So that is how Testo works.
Thank you. Yourself?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Simon. My name is Kapil Kapoor and I'm representing VayuGuard Climate Tech here. So as the name VayuGuard, so Vayu is an Indian name of air. So it's guarding the air. So we started this journey in 2022. And prior to that, I have spent more than a decade in the IAQ segment. And before that, I was into the anti-pollution department in Kuwait in Saudi. So when I started my career in IAQ, so at that particular moment, we had to explain what is PM1, what is PM2.5, PM10. After pandemic, everybody is now so much knowledgeable. So they know what they want to treat, whether it is homes, commercial offices, hospitals, or buildings, or whatsoever. IAQ is a segment where plenty of the things need to be get done. And as far as if we compare with the data, whether it is because the basic three things are there for the human beings. One is food, second water and air. So we hardly compare. So water, if you're a normal day-to-day routine activity, if you compare, so you hardly drink 2 to 3 liters a day. If you are an athlete or a sports person, you goes beyond 5 liters or up till 8 liters. But if you compare with the air, so we breathe in, breathes out 22,000 times in 24 hours as an adult. And quantum of air which we breathe in is about 11,000 liters a day. So you can imagine the impact of the same. So when we talk about air, so it is related with the lung. But as a human being, we correlate everything with the gut. So it's a different. So it's like filling up a bag with dust. When it is full, there's a no limit out of that. That is the same thing. So there's a no cure for the lungs. Yes, lung transplants are there. But in between, there's a no medicine which can cure your lungs.
What are the kind of things that VayuGuard are doing then? What are the kind of products that you're putting on the market to solve these problems?
As a VayuGuard, so it's a complete solution package, starting from the IAQ monitoring or the solution provider. So as far as the Indian market is concerned, it is very, very cost sensitive. So everybody talks about the lower cost. So we have designed a solution which can be of reusable kind of thing in comparison to the mechanical filtration which are being used in the industry. So as far as in Indian market, there are plenty of products available as a room air purifier. 99% of them are using HEPA-based filtration. If we talk about, there are some of the limitations of HEPA. After a certain period of time, they act as a secondary source of pollution after accumulating dust on it because of the microbial growth on the surface, because that is a hostile environment for the same. So if provided with the UVGI or other ionization processes, then it is fine. But for the lower segment side, if there is a three filter offset, pre-filter, HEPA and carbon, then it certainly becomes a secondary source of pollution. So in our case, we have designed a solution which can cater all three major contaminations, whether it is particulate matter, VOCs or the odor, which is in a normal room, or bacteria, virus or disinfection which can spread within the air. So that is one IP which we have for the same. And apart from that, IAQ, so there are certain more solutions which are building centric. For example, if it is a ongoing office, there are certain things which is going as a open kitchen concept. So they have coffee machines over there which emit some of the VOCs and coffee smell or food smell which is going spread in the air. So we have solutions for this and that can be customized as per the site requirement, dimensions and the CFM capacity. Then another segment on which we are doing our R&D is the emissions from the buildings. So nowadays every building is having STP or garbage treatment rooms. So while passing through the basement or entering into the basement, there are foul smells. You can't breathe in over there. So you can't even stand for even a single minute. So those are the emissions which are thrown to the atmosphere without treating them, without measuring them. Though in European countries, there are policies, but India is just following those footsteps. So it is going to be sooner, it will be there.
So you're offering basically a range of practical solutions to try and address some of these challenges.
We are designing it in the IIT Delhi as well, because the WayuGuard is a startup and incubated at IIT Delhi. So we are using their facility to develop the new technologies. So three more IPs we have filed. So there is a certain gap which we have looked around with the builder segment. So for example, they have one vendor for their digital signages. And second vendor for like Testo, they have equipments for measuring those devices. So there's a unsync between them. So they can't, their equipments can't communicate to each other. So if they want to showcase all the both of the things on a single screen, so both of the communication will not happen. So we club those together as a cloud system and a little bit of AI into the same, so that prediction analysis can be there, and they can do both of the things within a click. Of the matter of a click. So from anywhere in the globe they sit, and they can just put up the images for the digital signages, put up the timer for that particular image, it's done.
Excellent. Yourself.
Thank you, Simon, first of all, for inviting me on this podcast. My name is Rahul Kapoor. I am the managing director for Chemfil India. Chemfil has been the forefront of clean air solutions for over six decades, and it's a privilege for me to represent Chemfil for India market. Now, indoor air quality is something which is the most paramount for human health, but yet mostly unseen, unheard, and unspoken about. We spend over 90% of our times in indoor, whether it's in India or globally. Yet, this is one subject which is the least spoken about. At Chemfil, like Kapil mentioned, we breathe almost 11,000 liters or 22 kgs of air. So when we drink water or when we eat food, if there's a contamination, we can decide that, okay, and we decide to buy an alternative. But we can't sustain without breathing for over a minute or two, I mean, if you're an athlete. So imagine the quality of air, what we breathe in every now, is so much important for humans' health. And at Chemfil, we offer solutions to our customers all across the paradigm, 360 degrees. So whether it is the comfort segment for HVAC, whether it is molecular segment for the volatile organic compounds or odor, whether it is for the data centers, semiconductors, hospitals, you name it and we are there. I also take a lot of privilege in informing you that at Chemfil, we have three large R&D centers worldwide where we invest a lot of money and put in a lot of man hours to develop technologies for the world, for the future. So we don't only do what we were doing a few years back, but we're also investing into developing products which could be the solution for next 5 years. And as the industry evolves around us, whether it is semiconductors, whether it is data centers, or whether it is extremely hazardous environments like what will happen probably a couple of months down the line in Delhi, we have solutions to offer. So it's a very, very unique composition and combination of the products, the organization. It's worldwide. We work out of 60, 65 countries directly. We have more than 35 manufacturing units. We have more than 5,700 people working under the umbrella of Camphil. So yeah, it's a pretty large network of people, you know, serving humanity. And our motto is that clean air is a basic human right.
I'll get you back to the podcast in just a moment. I'd just like to take a minute to tell you about Zender, one of our partners. Zender is one of those companies that, if you're working in indoor air, you've probably come across. They really cover the full spectrum when it comes to ventilation, from simple mechanical extract right through to full climate systems where fresh air is enriched with heating and cooling. They offer the ventilation units, and they also offer everything around it: air distribution components, smart controls, the expert advice to make sure systems actually work as designed. One of the things I really like about Zender is their focus on knowledge through their experience centers and the Zender Academy. They help professionals keep pace with this fast-changing world of indoor climate. Whether it's tackling overheating, improving indoor air in tight retrofits, or simply making sure your filters are doing their job, Zender brings experience, depth of knowledge, and clarity to the conversation around healthy buildings. So if you're involved in building design, housing, or indoor environmental quality, they're really worth checking out. Details are in the links in the show notes, at airqualitymatters.net, of course, and at Zender, that's ZehnderGroup.com. Now, back to the podcast.
What a really interesting group of people to have to talk about the region, because, you know, between testing and performance and visualization of the how products work and air and the environment is performing, to innovation at the pointy end of the spear and startup and looking to find solutions and bridge gaps, to multinational organizations that are bringing the weight of expertise into the region and an established, you know, network of knowledge. I think it's a great perspective to have from the region. So thanks very much for coming in. I thought what would be interesting, as we did with the previous group, was to ask a question about what's not being talked about in this region that should be. What I like about that question is it particularly from three such unique perspectives, but all the same in the same breath, is it opens up the where we see the challenges, because there's enormous opportunity here in India to do better. We know that there's this phenomenal opportunity, amazing talent. But as in all areas of the world, there are things that aren't being addressed that we need to sort out. So perhaps if I start with yourself, what are we not talking about that we should be, do you think, from your perspective?
I'm talking in the sense like the system mainly. What our system or what our maybe design we do, how do we evaluate as whether the system or like whatever we have done it is as per the system, as per the design. People mostly they want to fit it everything and they want to complete the job, but they are not concerned about whether it is as per the design, as per the system, or whether we are following it everything. So that is very important. Nowadays just they want to cross check it, that's it. And they're not even evaluating properly. So that is lagging most of the people. So that is very important. That's why we are telling, we are educating customers. So it has to be done like this. It has to be taken like this. It has to be evaluated like this. So for this, we stand over there and we educate customers. Okay, these are the equipments can be useful for your research analysis and they can cross-check it. Okay, I have, as per the design, whether this temperature is attained in this room or not, how they do it. Some people, they will tell, I have a lot of experience. I can tell, okay, this is okay. But it is not good. As per the system, it is followed or not, that can be done with any kind of equipment. So I need a temperature measuring device. And if they want to do an analysis for a certain time, That is also possible. So that we are trying to educate with the customers. Most of them, as per design, they are not cope up with that. That is the main point.
I think that's a really interesting point, and it's one of my soapbox issues. So thank you for that. It is the, and I see your colleagues nodding to what you're saying, that validation of what's there is so important. And the hard reality in the built environment, isn't it always the case that often we're just simply not getting what we've paid good money for? You know, there's this assumption in the built environment that because we don't think about the air that we're breathing, that somebody else has taken care of that for us somewhere, you know? And we, you know, people wouldn't believe the horror stories. I'm sure all three of you can tell. But isn't that always the case? It's that it's so important that we validate and measure. What's the old saying? You can't manage what you don't measure. It's so true, isn't it?
So in IAQ, it is pretty much true. So for example, if we are trying to put up some solution, so first we need to analyze for what pollutant we need to put up a solution. For example, every geographical location has different prominent pollutant. Whether if we talk about Delhi NCR, the adjoining areas, for example, if we talk about Gurgaon, there is a major prominent pollutant is PM10. If we talk about the Delhi NCR, Delhi itself, so it has the gaseous contamination of SOx, NOx, carbon mono, which is vehicular emission. If we go towards the Noida, there is again gaseous contamination due to which corrosion is the most prominent factor which is going to happen in the HVAC systems. So first we need to analyze what is in the air because you can't see. So only the sensors are the devices which going to get you the knowledge about the parameters and the readings of those parameters in the air so that you can make a decision out of that. So for example, if the building is in the design stages, the HVAC designers or the consultant had done their jobs perfectly fine. When that building goes into the operational things, so in commercial buildings, whole space is designed on a recirculation system. So there are a number of employees or your even your housekeeping staff or everyone is inhaling or exhaling in the same space. So the worker or the coffee maker or tea maker whatsoever is there who might not be having that hygiene level back there in their house whatsoever the owner or the MD levels are maintaining, but they are sharing the same air. So if you can't measure that, if you can't treat that, so you are vulnerable.
Yeah. I know from a filter perspective, like that's 101. I was making a note when you were talking there about, and what sprung to mind was engineering controls. It's that you made a really good point, and that was that we're not asking the right questions from the beginning. What problem are we looking to solve? If you don't ask that question at the beginning, you've got no idea what the right solution is. And that's something I know from a filtration perspective. That's the 101, isn't it? You don't just bung a filter in because that's what comes with the fan.
So currently what is happening? So without knowing the problem, we are throwing the solution. So first approach should be, first we have to analyze that particular geographical location and accordingly we can design and then we can maintain that particular site as per the designer's aspect. So what is happening currently? When the handover is happened, at that particular moment, all the things which is being installed in the building, they are at optimal efficiencies. But after 1 year, after operational of 1 year, it drags down. Reason behind that, we are not sticking to the guidelines which designer had gave that these buildings should be maintained according to these SOPs. So standard operating procedures. So they are not following that. If they are not following that, then obviously efficiency is going to drop them, whether it is filtration, whether it is HVAC system or the energy consumption. So they are definitely going down.
So I don't know if you're answering your own question, but the question to you is the same. What are we not talking about in the region that we should be, do you think?
Okay, so first thing is monitoring. Second one is the filtration, which is at the utmost priority. So the filtration design should be as per the building's requirement because for example, if commercial spaces which are normally designed at a 10 to 12 air changes per hour, so those should be maintained. And the filtration whatsoever is being installed in the building, if you have air quality monitoring, it should not be the hourly basis or the intermittent type that third party comes in and he or she will or they will do the air quality analysis. The report will be there. It should not be like that. It should be continuous monitoring 24/7 so that you can have data. And according to that data, you can decide when is the time to clean the filters or replace the filters. So that should be the thing which should be followed for the maintenance perspective. Because ultimately, if you are not cleaning the filter, they will be getting choked. One is the worst IAQ levels inside the premises. Second one is the higher consumption on the HVAC system. Because if the filters are clean, lesser resistance of the air will be there. So the optimum efficiency will be maintained in the...
I see your colleague nodding furiously to what you're saying there, because I'd say he's in total agreement.
He would also agree with me. So in any case, whether it is conventional filtration or the electronic filtration, it is the same. Maintenance is the utmost priority.
And that's a really interesting theme, isn't it? That operational performance of ventilation systems, this run to failure mentality that we often have in spaces where we only do something when it starts rattling or making a noise or dripping on your head. And we've all seen the state of some of the filters that get pulled out of places, that there's this operational performance that both validation has a part to play in, but also this has to be part of the DNA of the management of spaces, that this stuff's important. And I was having this conversation the other day with somebody. You know, when you're in a big office and someone comes around in the middle of the workday and they're testing the fire alarm system, and you know that's important work, right? And that they're proud to do their job. It's important for life safety and so on. When was the last time we saw a ventilation specialist coming around in the middle of the day, making sure that the flow rates were still correct and the dampers were in the right position and the filters were in good performance? That should be a career for somebody. And the fact that it isn't says a lot about the industry, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure. So I'll add here, Simon. I guess so when we look at India as a country, so you'll have to look at India as different cities or states, pulled together under one umbrella of republic. Now, as we look at the tier one towns, the one where we're sitting today, Hyderabad, which has a relatively better air quality than Delhi, for example, things have started changing. We have had a lot of government intervention, which has been done over last 5 years since COVID breakdown. And we are today seeing the results of it. So we started building called as smart buildings, which are now being converted into healthy buildings. And I'm very, very happy to tell you today that we are in discussions with a lot of customers, large size, a lot of facilities management companies who maintain those buildings, asking us how can we make the smart building a healthy building. And it will never happen as a single effort. It has to be a multiple, efforts put in by different teams, different people. But good thing about India is that we've started awakening to the idea of creating healthy building for people working in those. So that's one part of your question. And to answer your primary question, that what is it that we are not talking about? So I have a very contrarian view. We are not talking about in India today as a total cost of ownership. Now, how do the discussions begin here is, what have you got? And this is the replacement. And let's just simply put and finish our jobs, right? Like you mentioned, nobody comes to validate whether filter is doing what it's supposed to do. And even I'll go one step forward, even to see that what filter has been installed as a first cut is the right one or not. So what we do generally is, once the facility is built, the maintenance fellow will see what filter is installed. He will simply raise the RFQ for that. Somebody would come issue a filter, replacement filter, but we're not talking in India today at all about the total cost of ownership. How a filter company can help you reduce that. Now, there are two ways of looking at it. One way is to look at a specific segment, a specific customer, specific geography, and develop something which is very much in line with their expectation. And second thing is to do it in a mass scale, which organization like us is capable of and has been successfully delivering. So what we have very successfully executed in Europe, USA, in parts of Asia Pacific, and now in India is, we have started speaking about total cost of ownership. We speak about life cycle cost of a filter. So we tell our customers, do not look at a filter as a low cost product. of 100% cost of a life cycle, filter cost is only 15% of it. But 80% of that cost comes from the energy. And every kilowatt of power saved is cost saved and carbon emission saved in the environment. So we have to look at the total cost of ownership. But then again, India being India, very diversified, large, different set of customers, it's not possible to immediately start this. So we've got a support from government. So government has started something called as BIS standards for air filtration for general ventilation filters. As a part of it, now this is where I said the contrarian view, washing of filters will not be allowed. Now, what does that mean? We do not sell filters by telling our customers that it will last one year or 2 years. We tell them what's the dust holding capacity of the filter, what's the initial pressure drop of the filter, and then on a life cycle of 5 years, how many replacements would you need without washing and putting the dust into the soil, which again hazards my environment. Now, that's the beauty of it. And the result of it is the customers who have started understanding the logic have started buying this argument. Because as you mentioned, so the right saying says, I either believe in God or I believe in facts.
Yeah.
So when you put something from Campbell perspective on a piece of paper, which states that over a period of 5 years, you don't only save on a cost of filter replacements, you gain so much of carbon footprint. So you get carbon credits for that. So you can put in a public report that this is the amount of carbon saving you've done. And everything aligns with the mission which our Prime Minister, Mr. Modi, has raised, which is to reduce India's carbon footprint by 40% by 2040. So now this is the beauty of it, and this is something which we haven't spoken so much about as an industry in India so far. But I'm very positive moving forward with customers becoming more and more aware of it. This will become one of the key case or key pointers before we sell.
Isn't it interesting that what that level of sophistication in the conversation brings, because we move it away from this checkboxing exercise of, do I have that? Yes. Does it make a noise when I turn it on? Yes. To actually measuring the performance, understanding how innovation sits in there and starting to think about things in a much more nuanced way. The impact on cost of energy on a building, the total cost of ownership. Even moving on to what are the impacts on health and performance of staff and this idea of healthy buildings. So there's enormous room, isn't there? Enormous headroom to bring people up to a conversation level where it's very difficult for them to go back to checkboxing. If you're engaging with them at a higher level to say, actually, yeah, because the automobile industry is a classic example of this. We don't look anymore at just the cost of a car. We're making very sophisticated judgments on its depreciation over time, its cost of maintenance, its, you know, what kind of schedules it needs for performance. You know, the car is telling you when it needs an oil change, not because of the mileage, but because of the viscosity of the oil in the engine. You know, we expect a lot from an asset that costs a fraction of the assets of the built environment. And it always seems amazing to me that our conversation is only just starting to think in those terms in buildings. One of the things you mentioned, and I think it'd be an interesting one for all three of you to reflect on, is the regional differences in India, because it's very much like the United States in some way, that from state to state to state, and here it seems to me every stone's throw is almost a completely different type of culture and food and way of doing things and approach. So is that one of the challenges in building a national conversation about something, or even a broader regional conversation about something? It is the localization in India, it's almost state to stay. Does that present challenges for you as industry?
No, I would say for filters as a whole thing, no, it is not, because at the end of the day, we may be different states, but as I mentioned, tied under the umbrella of Republic of India, and most of us are spread across the nation. For example, Campfield today operates out of 15 cities in India. And we have our customers who are in Hyderabad, but they have their offices in Mumbai, they have in Delhi, they have in Bangalore, they have in Pune or other cities. So it's actually not. We are very, very unified when it comes to buying patterns, when it comes to taking the new technology interventions. We are very, very collective. And India, surprisingly, Simon, in a positive manner, has a lot of global footprint as well.
Yeah.
So we pick up ideas, global ideas as well. We may implement them later, but yeah, we pick up those ideas sooner than later.
So you have an advantage of your scale where you have people in each region. Is that different? Do you two have a different perspective as being from one location trying to grow in to India? Does it present challenges when you can't have a salesperson in every, or probably an office in every city? You know, that you have to find ways of doing business and demonstrating use cases. I mean, I had one conversation with somebody yesterday about the fact that even if you create a pilot or a demonstration project in one area, people want to see a pilot in this area. You know, there's that kind of a, and that's not unique to India, I should say. That happens all over the world. People want to see something local to them that they can get some trust in.
So, for example, we have already one demonstration site at IIT Delhi. So, where we showcase them that what is the outside parameters and what is the parameters at the entering level of that filtration. So, wherever we have put our filtration. So, whatsoever IAQ parameters before entering towards the filter, and what are the after, and what are the inside the premises. Because when the air going through the filters, getting filtered and then going to the space, there are certain other infiltration points where it is getting mixed. So whatsoever clean air is coming from the HVAC system, it is going to be mixed in that particular chamber. And there might be door openings, there might be vacuum might have done in the morning. So if we see the trend of the parameters in the morning, 10 to 12, 2 hours of time period, the IEQ levels are slightly higher in comparison to the normal 12 to 4 p.m. Because in the morning, the cleaning activities has happened and some of the contaminations are still in the air, which need to be treated by recirculation of the filtrations. So second thing is the devices which we have designed, those are communicatable devices. So for example, whatsoever is currently going in the filtration, it will be shown in the terms of numbers. So for example, if we talk about PM 2.5, PM 10, PM 1 efficacy level, VOC level. So this is being shown at the screens that what are the entering levels and what are the clean air levels. And after that, whatsoever is going in the energy side for the HVAC system, because nowadays every HVAC system is having VFDs. So our devices have a very low static. So we have defined a certain limits. For example, if the filter goes beyond this particular static, the alarm or soft notifications will go to the client in the term of the right time is to clean the filters. If not, that this much of the energy loss will happen. So ultimately, it's a game of all the data. So whatsoever data you are getting, accordingly, you can make a decision out of that. It's a complete solution with the help of sensors, filtration devices, and the IoT.
The challenge with that kind of approach, isn't it, that because it's so consultative based, that it becomes hard to scale, because you have to, it's a very nuanced and complex conversation you're having client to client to client. So it must present some really interesting challenges.
So basically it's an optional for them. Like if they're really conscious about the carbon footprint, they definitely opt for the complete solution. No, then only the filtration will be there and the monitoring will be there. Then they can have insights of the data for the IAQ only. But if they really want to do energy saving or really want to save the carbon footprints out of that, then they have to go for the complete solution. And nowadays, everybody is, if the healthy building is the concept, then they definitely opt for the same.
I mean, one of the exciting things about this region more broadly and the global south as a whole is that there's so much potential. You know, there's so much talent on the ground. There's so much growth in the built environment sector. It can be quite complex, I think, the directions things can go. But I think what would be an interesting point to discuss would be, from your perspective, from your industry's perspective, what would a good 5-year roadmap look like for you? What kind of stepping stones or things would you like to start seeing stepping into place that really grow your industry or grow awareness in your industry or put buildings in a better place?
Next 5 years, if you see, as I told, we have a lot of systems coming in. We have, our government is implementing a lot of laws and rules to make the human values higher. In India, if you see, the human values, we have to prefer more. It is very important for everyone. So nowadays, our government is very strict to ensure that we give importance to our human values, so that any industries, if you open in India, are like whoever follows, they stick to it. As I told, just a food subject, I'll tell you. Maybe 5 years or 10 years back in India, we are not following that oil quality enough. That is which I call TPM, total pollen monitoring. But now if you see, we are following that now. That is directly or indirectly affecting our health. So we are giving that human values importance nowadays. Over the past 5 years, that is implementing in India right now. So that is very good part. And even next 5 years, if you see, we'll be becoming one of the good countries in the world where we follow or where we try to avoid the global warming as much as possible by following this kind of norms which our government implements or which the global team is expecting. That is very important. And we are trying to do that. We are in the sense like as a India, as a any kind of company, we are trying to implement on that. So try to implement that thing, we need certain instruments. Like you were telling, some filtration is required because 90% of our people, we do live in this indoor. Only 10% we are spending our time in outdoor. So those kind of systems are very important. So that's why the government is implementing certain norms which we have to follow it, and we are following it. So consistently we are doing it. In next 5 years, again, we'll be repeating the same thing. We will consistently follow and we'll be in a better position as compared to other countries. We'll be in a better position where we are also giving more human values, preference, as you tell it.
That's interesting. And is that something you two would agree on? That and we see this, and I reflect on this all the time, that sectors will kick and obfuscate and push the can down the road trying not to do things, and then all of a sudden a law comes in that says you have to do it, and everybody's like going, oh, okay, well, we're going to do it then. And you're like going, we've been telling you this is a good idea for 20 years, why haven't you been listening? And literally on a dime, an entire sector will go, all right, okay then, we'll do it that way. Do you see that happen in India as well, that actually sometimes it just requires bravery of the legislators to write the rules to say, no, this has to be done. And the industry just goes, oh, sure, okay, we'll do it then, I suppose, you know, and off it goes.
Yeah, it will. I mean, stick works better than the carrot sometimes. And yeah. In country like ours, which is such a huge country of 1.4 plus billion people, surely regulations. And this was part of my answer to your question. So if you may permit. So I'll put it this way, like he mentioned, the value for life, I would say the value of human life would definitely improve over the next 5 years for India, which would then necessitate the arrangements to be made for companies like ours to create more and more infrastructure, a well-spread infrastructure on how we can do that. So we'll have to have equipments for better particle size 2.5, particle size 10 monitoring, as well as to solution to eradicate that for even households. So right now, how I would answer your question is, in next 5 years for India, regulatory affairs is going to become one of the most stringent aspects of how we design buildings, how we offer solutions. So organizations will have to pay the price of it if it is not, just like it happened in Indian domestic electronics segment, where all our refrigerators, all our washing machines, even this LED light is labeled today, whether it's 3-star or a 4-star or a 5-star. So consumer knows what he's buying. So it will happen in the filters. So you'll have a very, very strong regulatory affair mechanism, which would then help consumer know what he's buying, which would then help companies like us to invest more and more in building on infrastructure, which is for the future and which is not cost sensitive, but which is solution sensitive. Another thing which would improve over the next 5 years is that as India's disposable income improve even further, people will become more aware of what they want and how they want to live. So it would be very different from how we live today. Like, I live in Delhi NCR, one of the most polluted cities in the world today. Before I joined this organization, I spent 20 years working for two large HVAC companies in India. But I was not aware of how PM 2.5 and PM 10 could affect my health or my family's health. So imagine somebody who spent 20 years plus working for our two largest Indian HVAC companies did not know about this. So awareness will go up. Yeah, probably it will become an academia subject in the schools. So kids would be taught while they grow up what's the importance of the good air, indoor air quality. We have seen multiple cases, Simon, of both influential and non-influential people dying of sudden heart attack in India. So the cardiovascular issues are growing.
Yeah.
Now, there is no proven case as in today that it is because of the indoor air quality, but I would not shy to say that it has to be to do something to do with that.
So he's very true. So currently in the past 2.5 years after the pandemic, we have seen the deaths of just early 40s, 35 years old, some of the pretty much influential persons as well, just because of the cardiac arrest. So if we talk about particularly Delhi NCR or the other polluted cities which are in India, so it is correlated with the air pollution as well, because the tiniest particle which can't filter out by your lungs, it directly goes and flows in your bloodstreams. And then these are the culprits which makes the clogs out of that.
Yeah.
Because in the bloodstream, you can't filter out. Once it enters into your bloodstream, you can't filter it out. Only filtration system is your lungs. And the tiniest 0.3 micron or lower than that, it's passed through those particular things and then it is mixed in your bloodstream.
And we now know that air pollution is multi-systemic, its ability to affect every organ of the body. There isn't a system of your body that isn't influenced by the quality of the air you breathe. So from early onset dementia and Alzheimer's through cardiovascular disease to liver disease, cancers, lymphatic issues, you name it, you know, birth weights, endocrine system disruption. It just goes on. Had a student on yesterday talking about microplastics in the air. You know, we haven't even started addressing that one yet. Like, so this stuff goes on and on and on. It's a horror show, right? So this stuff really matters.
When you dig down deep for the air, it is particularly a horror show when you get to know the insights of the same, because it's a very vast field. Once you enter into it, you just left all other things and just focus on the same, that how we can reduce it, how we can treat it. And for example, for the next 5 years. So we need to think out of the box and all the, like, for example, authorities or the builders or the solution maker, they have to be on the same page if they really want to reduce the outdoor pollution. Because the sources of outdoor pollutions are, for example, the emissions from the building, emissions from the vehicles, emissions from the industries, or some of the due to geographical conditions. So once we decide if we want to tackle the pollution at the sources from where it is getting emitted or where it is getting mixed into our outdoor spaces, then only we can draw out at a solution. If we say, in particularly in India, by installing smoke towers or bigger giant air purifiers, we can clean the air. It is not going to happen. Some of the failure cases are already there. You just need to focus on the emission points from where it is getting mixed to the atmosphere. For example, currently we are working on the one of the aspect, building emissions. So currently, every residential and commercial buildings have their own STP plants. While segregating gray and black water, there are certain greenhouse effect gases which are being thrown to the atmosphere without treating them. Some of the prominent builders are doing that, but it should be mandatory. First step is monitoring and how much quantum they are throwing to the atmosphere, and there should be a stringent policy on the same. Currently, I'm sorry to say, it is not there in Indian market, or we are trying to get it done. We are in touch with the Delhi DPCC, Delhi Pollution Control Committee, as well as the Environmental Ministry, so that they should implement that particular thing. So every building should have their emission inventories with them, how much they are throwing to the atmosphere, whether it is in the form of greenhouse effect gases from either from the STP, ETPs, or from the garbage treatment plants, or from the gen sets, whatsoever equipments are there, whosoever is polluting the outdoor pollution. So that should be there. And if we control one, then second, third, fourth, the cumulative impact on the outdoor environment should get reduced. And then currently the situation is Delhi NCR in that, like, there are plenty of research which depicts every third child is prone to asthma.
Yeah, I think you had something to add as well, didn't you, when we were talking about this multi-systemic thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And I guess as Camfil, we've understood one thing. When we look at a pollution, 10 years back, we could only see the air. When we look 5 years ahead of the time, we have to look at the gases as well, because both air particles and the gases are equally harmful for human health. and not only for the kids, for elderly, for the environment. And the another study has proven now the better indoor air can improve the efficiency of people working by almost 11%. Now, 11% in Indian-like environment, which is highly service sensitive, we offer services to the world. We operate call centers, we operate data centers, and we operate huge facilities which serve the customers across the globe. Now, 11% is huge.
Yeah.
So, of course.
Yeah. No, in that service industry, it seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? That you know, if you imagine the kind of investment that goes into training just to eke out another 2 or 3% of a call center staff, whereas you can get that incremental improvement of 10, 11% just by getting them to breathe the air that they're in, seems like a win-win situation for everybody. And what about yourself? What do you see over the next 5 years as being key to unlocking some of this potential?
Okay, so as Rahul has mentioned, so particulate matter, VOCs, gases, as well as the microbiological contaminations as well, as you also mentioned for the microplastics. So these are the other aspects which we need to cater as well. So pandemic is the example of the same because of the biological contaminations, plenty of plethora of deaths are there and some of again, after effects are is already there. So we need to address all the things as a cumulative solution. And second, all the organizations, whether it is filter making companies or the policy makers, they should be in a sync. Because, for example, the filter makers or purification devices manufacturer like us and Camfil, so we always emphasize on the system efficacy levels and right design approach and the maintenance levels. But it should be in a policy kind of thing and it should be strictly followed because in India, only thing is getting followed if it is strictly done by the bylaws. So if you say that it's like you should maintain this, it's his call whether to maintain or not. He's not getting into the compliances for the same. If it is in the compliance, then he should have to follow the same.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. You know, and laws are no use without policing, right? And that's the same for any law. The law has no power unless you think you're going to get caught. And I imagine, you know, and India isn't unique for that. It's a problem everywhere, literally everywhere, is that ventilation has never really been policed. You know, there is no fear, almost zero fear, that you're ever going to get a tap on the shoulder about the ventilation design that you put in a place or a tap on the shoulder about your maintenance schedule. You know, and I think as a finishing point, and that sums up beautifully a large part of this conversation about the need for, you know, appropriate products and materials going into building to deliver the right air quality outcomes, the headspace for innovation and to think about buildings from a more holistic point, and this validation and measurement of what we're getting so we know we're getting what we paid for.
Yes, I think exactly.
Sums up a really useful conversation. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet and talk to you.
Thank you, Simon.
Thanks for listening. Before you go, can I ask a favour? Before you shoot off to whatever it is you have to do next, or even the next podcast, if you enjoyed what we've been talking about here, please do spread the word and let's keep building this community. And don't forget to check out our sponsors in the show notes. Ultra Protect, Eurovent, Erico, Aco, Farmwood and Zender, all amazing companies, and without them, this podcast would just simply not be possible. Check them out in the show notes at airqualitymatters.net and do check out our YouTube channel. All this content is there, plus much more. See you again next week.